Are you trying to squeeze the starting solid food stuff into your already busy schedule? Well, I have an all-in-one, done-for-you solution that's going to take the guesswork out of feeding your baby. My online program is called Baby-Led Weaning with Katie Ferraro. It contains all of my baby-led weaning training videos, the original 100 First Foods content library, plus a 100-day meal plan with recipes, like the exact sequence of which foods to feed in which order. So if you want to stop trying to piece all this feeding stuff together on your own, I would be honored if you would join me inside of the program. You can get signed up at babyledweaning.co/program. If you're new to this whole world of baby-led weaning and starting solid foods, you might still be on the fence as to whether this approach is going to work for you. And if that's the case, I want to send you my free feeding guide called Will Baby-Led Weaning Work for My Baby? This is a guide that contains a decision tree map that you can work your way through to determine if this is the right approach for you guys and then when it's time to start. Grab your copy of Will Baby-Led Weaning Work for My Baby on my website at babyledweaning.co/resources.
There's foods your dogs can have that are human foods that you should be giving to them. To me, it's more about how you're doing it. If I'm taking food off of the baby's high chair and I'm giving it to my dog, that's a problem. Because he's gonna say, oh, my food comes from there. If the dog is cleaning things up off the floor, to me, I mean, that leads to a whole lot of different things because the dog could be eating a food that's potentially dangerous.
Hey there, I'm Katie Ferraro, registered dietitian, college nutrition professor, and mom of seven, specializing in baby-led weaning. Here on the Baby-Led Weaning with Katie Ferraro podcast, I help you strip out all of the noise and nonsense about feeding, giving you the confidence and knowledge you need to give your baby a safe start to solid foods using baby-led weaning. Is it safe for your dog to eat the food that your baby drops on the floor? And should a dog even be allowed to be around your baby when they're in their high chair? So many questions about dogs when it comes to starting solid foods. And I got to be real with you guys. I was not a dog person for a very, very long time. And in probably like the biggest about face of my life, we got a dog that was 2.5 years old, perfectly trained. And it's been like the best thing ever. Now I like totally love dogs enough in this podcast accelerator course. And I meet this guy named Jake Schneider. He has a dog training academy called On Dog Training Academy. He also has a podcast all about dogs and online course about how to bring your dog home. And I was like, oh my gosh, there are so many similarities to getting a dog as there are to getting a baby. Like all of the stuff like you could buy, but I'm like, do you really need that? And like all the controversy about like what sort of food should it be eating? And then like the different ways that you can be shamed as a person parent versus a dog parent. Like I mean, it's kind of wild. So Jake and I had a great conversation. I was like, will you please come on my podcast? Because I'd love if you could share some dog training tips, in particular to when your baby starts solid food. So we've covered dogs and babies in a few previous episodes, which I'll put those in the description and link them on our show notes as well. But I wanted you guys to hear from Jake because I think he has like a very straightforward way of saying like, that's not that big of a deal. Or like, actually, you really shouldn't be doing that. And I just like his attitude. I like his approach. I'm definitely going to be taking his course. After talking to him, I realized that there's certainly some areas in our household where we could use a few more boundaries and rules regarding where the dog is and is not allowed to be. And Jake shares a story about how he got his dog to leave the kitchen when he's cooking. And I didn't even think of it as a safety thing, but like I literally almost trip over the dog like 15 times a day when I'm cooking. And I didn't realize it was okay to like teach your dog to be out of the kitchen when you're cooking. So with no further ado, I want to introduce you guys to Jake Schneider from On Dog Training Academy, sharing some tips about establishing boundaries and rules for your dog around the time when your baby is also starting solid foods. So Jake, I met you in a podcast accelerator course. We're both in. You had mentioned you work with your wife, Jenny. You guys have an online dog training academy, but it was either her parents or your parents. I can't remember who had originally owned a dog training business. Is that how you got into dog training and coaching, or is this something that you had always dreamed of doing?
I've kind of always had the idea of doing it, but it was my mom. My mom's been a dog trainer now for 35 years. Yeah, I'm almost 40. So 35 years of my life, she's been a dog trainer. My dad started training with her probably about 25 years or so ago. He started running some of the business. So I feel like I've always kind of wanted to do it. Once I got married and stuff, everything just shifted back and just lined up with saying, hey, like the area that we live in is a little more out in the country. It was extremely void of any sort of dog training or anything. And we had a puppy at the time. And it's like, we should probably start helping some people because we know we can. Kind of was always there. It was always in my life. Like we always had 4 or 5 dogs growing up all the time.
But what about your wife? Like, how did you get her into it? Was it her idea or did you have to talk her into it? Because like, I know personally, I cannot work with my husband. I really admire people who can work with their partners and spouses. How did that shake out?
We've now been working together for 17 years. So she came from a family that had no pets. She really was a cat person at heart, and she still is a cat person at heart. But her big thing was like, she loved the idea of us having a business together. She loved the idea of being her own boss. She was always had like this entrepreneur kind of like drive. And this kind of was something she's able to do. So she's really good with the dog. She's really good with the behavior cases and stuff that we've dealt with. That's her jam. Like, she loves that stuff. So yeah, we work well together, but I don't think it took convincing necessarily, but 17 years working together, we've definitely.
Congratulations. That's really impressive. And one thing that kind of caught my attention when we were in that course together was a comment you made that you were working on a new program. And I don't think it was specific to parents, but the idea came up of like welcoming a baby home and how to get the dog acquainted with the baby. I know a lot of couples who will like get a dog first together to kind of test the waters. And then they'll like, all right, that worked out. Like, maybe we can handle a baby and bringing the baby on board. Can you give us some ideas like for established dog parents that are new people parents? What should they be aware of when they're bringing a baby home to their dog friendly house?
People just think it's going to be seamless. A lot of times they're like, I got this dog. He's super friendly. It's all cute. We're going to have a kid and it's all just going to be seamless.
It's also going to be cute and they're going to get along great.
Yeah. The picture perfect in your brain. But what people have to remember too is like, what's your environment and lifestyle leading up to having a baby? Let's say it's you, your partner, and your dog. I imagine that's probably a pretty relaxed, quiet environment for the most part. Like, it's me, my wife, and my dog. Now, we have client dogs and stuff too, but our environment's relatively quiet. And so you have to think about, okay, when you bring this baby into your household, your dog's schedule that it's been used to for however long is going to be flipped upside down because now in the middle of the night, you're up many times. And so that affects the dog. Also, you're dealing with jealousy issues. Like, is your dog going to be jealous now that some of the attention or the attention that normally goes to the dog is now shifting to the baby as it should? Your priority now becomes not the dog, but the baby. And that can affect the dog where the dog starts to get more jealous. And just the fact kids carry a different type of energy than adults do. If the dog isn't used to it, it can certainly affect the dog too in many ways. And then kind of lastly, like the needs of your dog starts to not be met as well. So like, again, the time that you had to walk your dog, to exercise your dog, to train your dog, to do all this stuff, you're putting that extra time now into your baby. Again, completely reasonable, but that's going to affect your dog's personality, your dog's energy outlets. And so like, you have to make sure you come up with plans and like, how are we going to still meet our dog's needs? And that might be through daycare, through, I like to incorporate things. So I do a lot of play and train with my dog where I go out in the yard and I play with them, like throwing ball, but I'm incorporating mental work into it, just like healing sits downs as we're playing. So you're working both brain and body so that I'm tiring both out because we don't have a baby, but we have client dogs and things that pull our attention away from our own dog. So just understanding that your dog's needs and time is going to be affected big time. That's something I think some people don't really realize till they get into it.
And what do you do then? Do you have to retrain the dog? Obviously, you're working on different schedules. You just need to be cognizant, aware of it. Are there actually like tactile things you need to be doing? Or these are just kind of like esoteric, just, hey, heads up, this is what's going to be happening.
I like to, if my dog's not used to high energy stuff, with our lifestyle, it's pretty calm. So if I feel like with a client dog, if they're planning to have a baby soon, I'll take the dog around to like parks and stuff in the summer where there's a playground with kids screaming. And I start to condition the dog to just being okay with screaming, running kids, lots of energy, all that weird stuff. Because if the dog's not used to it, that's where we get the calls that, oh, my dog, you know, nipped at my kid or something because of stress. And so, yeah, you can definitely be proactive and like, hey, before the baby comes, we're going to start getting our dog into some more situations that are different to it, higher energy to it. Or just like, if you have time, jumping into classes, taking online classes, doing something to increase your dog's obedience. That's just going to make things easier if your dog's better at listening, just in general.
Hey, we're going to take a quick break, but I'll be right back. This episode is brought to you by BetterHelp. If you've been thinking about giving therapy a try, BetterHelp is a great option. It's a convenient, flexible, affordable, and entirely online experience. All you do is just fill out a brief questionnaire to get matched with a licensed therapist, and you can also switch therapists at any time for no additional charge. I used to think therapy was just for people who have experienced major trauma, but therapy can help you be at your best no matter what you're going through. So whether it's to learn new positive coping skills, set more realistic boundaries, or just show up as a better version of yourself, BetterHelp is here to help. Therapy can help you find what matters to you so that you can do more of it. If you want to live a more empowered life, therapy can help you get there, and BetterHelp can help you. Visit BetterHelp.com/weaning today to get 10% off your first month. That's BetterHelp, HELP.com/weaning, and get 10% off your first month. So the parents and caregivers who listen to this podcast, they're very different than your audience. They're like, primarily in charge of babies who are somewhere between 6 to 12 months of age, and these babies are just starting solid foods. So this means, like, up until 6 months of age, that baby's been exclusively either breastfed or bottle fed. So it was infant milk keeping them alive for the first 6 months of life. Now the situation's changing. The baby's starting to sit in a high chair usually. You know, that's in the kitchen where the dog may or may not be free to roam in and out of, or like they've had free reign of the kitchen. And now all of a sudden this little person is in the kitchen with them too, sitting in the high chair. Do you have any suggestions for practices or habits to instill with your dog when it comes to the baby eating foods that, you know, inevitably are going to drop on the floor? So like, take us through, you know, maybe that second half of infancy, how things might change with regard to your dog in the house with your baby now eating.
If your dog has counter surfing issues, you could teach your dog to no longer do that. Like, work with them to fix that behavior, because dogs are going to say, hey, there's food up on this high chair. I'm going to put my feet up here and try to help myself to the kid's food. But the big thing, I think, is starting to come up with plans of like management. How am I going to manage my dog? And a big thing to do when it comes to management is just getting your dog kennel trained. If it's time to feed the baby, I'm going to put the dog away because I don't have the time to try and juggle both dog and baby. And it could be make things worse if I'm not careful. When I do have the time, or when you do have the time, you could be working on certain training things. But I don't like to say, okay, well, I want to teach my dog to stay out of the kitchen, so I'm going to work on it, or I'm going to teach my dog it in the situation at hand.
Yeah. So you're doing the training ahead of time, essentially. You're kind of forecasting how things are going to change.
Yep, exactly. Because if you're trying to do it in the moment, your timing's off, your communication's off, because you're bouncing back and forth between baby and dog.
And this is so stressful when your kids start solid foods. Parents are really scared about choking. They're scared about allergic food reactions. Like, you really need to be paying attention. I think you make a good point. Like, the dog is a priority, but the baby's safety is the ultimate priority. And maybe having that dog in the kennel is going to be able to allow you to create a more peaceful eating environment for your child.
Yeah, exactly. And then, like, once you have the time, say you have 5 or 10 minutes or whatever, or if like your partner can go do some dog training or something while you're feeding your baby or whatever. Once you've started to train the behaviors, like, let's say you're teaching your dog, stay out of the kitchen. Like, that's something, even with our own dog, when I'm in there cooking, he has to be out of the kitchen. That's a rule. When I'm not, if I'm doing dishes or if I'm just doing something in the kitchen, he can lay in there and hang out with me. But if I say get out, that means you got to leave. And typically for him, it means go to the living room.
How come that is? Like, you don't want him accidentally eating something he shouldn't be. You don't want him to get burned by splattering oil. Like, why do they have to be out of the kitchen if you're cooking in your house?
For me, it's just all about safety, 100%. And plus, like, our kitchen isn't huge. And so, like, I'm moving around, and I'm obviously not the smallest person. So if I'm moving around, I've tripped over him or stepped on him or whatever. And I just want him out of the way so that I can just focus on what I'm doing. But just wherever your baby's going to eat, just tell your dog to leave. Like, just don't let him come in. And I know it sounds easier than maybe it is for training, but keeping them out, teaching them, like, I love teaching dogs either a stay or a place command. So having them go to their bed, lay down, and stay. You can give them a bone to chew on. You can give them treats for doing it, whatever. But teaching the dog, when I feed the baby, you go to that bed and lay down. And the bed is like in the living room, well away from the baby that could possibly be launching food towards the dog out of the throwing distance, you know. And then just teaching like a very basic leave it command. I think that's a command that I think classes cover some, obedience classes cover. But I think what I've noticed is that the way sometimes it's trained isn't the way we train it. We train leave it as like a be all end all. If I tell a dog to leave something, it means they're never going to get it. So if the baby drops something on the ground and I don't want the dog to get it, I can tell him, leave it. And my dog would go, okay. And he'd just leave. He'd just look away from it and walk away. I'll say, leave it. And the dog will, you know, a lot of times the way I've seen it trained is the dog will leave it for a while. And then the dog owner will say, okay, now you can have it.
Is that sending mixed messages? Like, is that confusing? Should leave it be a forever command? Or is like, leave it now, you can go get it, like confusing them?
I think that type of control is really nice to have on your dog, but I call it wait. Like, if I want my dog to eat something, but I don't want him to eat it yet, I'll throw a piece of food on the ground and I'll say, wait. And then once I'm ready, I can tell him he can have it. But I want a command, and this is what leave it is for us. That means it is not yours. You don't get it. You don't touch it, whatever. But if the dog leaves it alone, like with my dog, if I say leave it and he turns his head and just ignores it, I'm rewarding him with treats and praise and everything. But it's not coming from the thing that I told him to leave. We use it a lot for like puppies when we're walking with cigarette butts on the ground and garbage and rocks and all that stuff. But it's really good in the kitchen when it comes to things falling or babies throwing food.
Well, perfect segue to garbage surrounding the floor. Some families are open to their dog cleaning up after a meal and eating people food, while I know others are strictly opposed to that. What's your stance as a certified dog trainer on dogs eating human foods? Which one are off limits? And do you have any suggestions for families who are trying to establish these household rules about dogs interacting with food now that the baby is learning how to eat?
So I never look at food as like human food. It's a really popular thing for people to say, like, oh, you know, I don't want to give my dog human food. I look at it as, is this food healthy for my dog or not healthy for my dog? And there's a lot of, I guess, human foods that are healthy for dogs. Like blueberries have a lot of antioxidants that are good for dogs. Yogurt has probiotics, like your regular yogurt, not your super sugary yogurts, but your regular yogurt and stuff. And pumpkin's really good with fiber. There's foods your dogs can have that are human foods that you should be giving to them. To me, it's more about how you're doing it. If I'm taking food off of the baby's high chair and I'm giving it to my dog, that's a problem. Because he's going to say, oh, my food comes from there. If the dog is cleaning things up off the floor, to me, I mean, that leads to a whole lot of different things because the dog could be eating a food that's potentially dangerous. Grapes, things like that, raisins are not good for dogs. I think it was episode 332. You did a whole thing with foods that dogs can and cannot eat. It's definitely worth a listen if people haven't listened, but like we need to be careful because there's foods that we can eat that are good for us that are really toxic to dogs. And I personally don't allow my dog. I get that it's helpful when your dog cleans up the whole floor and now all of a sudden, oh, I don't have to sweep.
But I really appreciate your perspective because I come from a place of like, when in doubt, leave it out. Like, I don't want to be liable for it. So like, can I just set a baseline rule that is like, yes, of course it would be easier if the dog licked this all up. But like, there's a lot of annoying things you have to do as a parent and freaking sweeping the floor three times a day after they eat is maybe just one of them.
Yeah. And the thing I think sometimes people don't realize is that there's consequences beyond it. If you let your dog clean up let's say your dog cleans the floor up every time and your dog never gets into a bad food that's possibly dangerous for it. There's other things that could possibly become a problem. Your dog now learns how to scavenge the floor. Like every time it's in the kitchen, the dog's nose is on the ground and it's looking for things. And as hard or as good of a job as we try to do cleaning things up, you're going to miss something. What if that grape rolls to the corner and you don't see it? Now suddenly your dog, who's got a super sniffer on him, is able to find it and eats it. So I'd rather not do that and just teach my dog, don't come in the kitchen, don't do this stuff, don't go for the food on the floor. I'll just clean it all up. Plus, personally, I think if the dog is underfoot and your baby is dropping food and everything, I think sometimes for babies, it becomes a game of like, I'm just going to throw food to the floor of the dog.
Especially for the older babies where you are going to move into those, you know, you're mentioning grapes and raisins. Like I have 100 first foods program. So we teach parents how to feed their baby 100 foods before they turn one. And you're saying all these foods. I'm like, dude, I need 100 first dog foods program, but I don't. But there's foods on the 100 first foods list that you get to a point where it is safe for your babies to eat. Grapes are a perfect example. Once they have their pincer grasp, usually around 9-10 months of age, they can pick up the smaller pieces of food. They also know how to manipulate and maneuver them around their mouth so that they don't pose a choking hazard. But like, I'm going to give my older baby grapes. But that older baby, that 10-month-old baby is the exact age who's starting to drop food on the floor to get my goat, to get a rise out of me, to see what sort of reaction I have. And they're going to do it to the dog as well. So what I'm hearing you say is it kind of makes more sense just to have that blanket rule of the dog's not in the kitchen when the people are eating or the baby is eating or whatever your situation may be. Because it's not just about you feeding the dog grapes. It's that you turn your head for 1 second and the baby who's now okay to have grapes is feeding the dog who's not okay to have grapes.
Yeah. Unintended consequences is pretty much what it is. Yeah. I'm sure when I was a kid, I probably threw food around at my dogs too. Like it seems like it'd be something fun to do at that age.
Tell me a little bit about your podcast. I love hearing about other people's shows and the courses. I know your show is called Learn, Laugh, Bark. What sort of content do you cover? What inspired you to start a podcast? And then what inspired you to develop online courses for dog owners?
When COVID hit, we were forced to push everything basically online, like a lot of people had to do. Like, we did so much in-person stuff that when COVID hit, we couldn't, we were out of options. And so we're like, let's reach out, let's start doing online training, because we still needed to reach out to people. But we also wanted a way that people could get to know us as trainers, as whatever. And so that's what the podcast started manifesting as, is like a way for people to get to know our personality, get to know our training style, our opinions on certain things. And so we started that, I think it was 2021, I believe we started the podcast. We cover a lot of different things. We cover training tips. We cover questions that people have. Like, if someone submits a question, like, why do dogs growl? Or why is my dog's hair standing up? Or counter surfing. We've done episodes talking about children and dogs and how the interactions between the two can be really great, but also can be really bad if not managed right. And so we cover massive amount of different types of things. And we also like to do stories. Like, I love telling stories about service dogs who did certain things, or working dogs who say, like, there was one recently who a dog saved its owner from drowning. It broke through the ice. And this was in Michigan, broke through the ice. And because the dog knew fetch, the helper person was able to get the dog to fetch rope to his owner because the person couldn't get out there. And then he was able to pull his owner to safety. So it's just, we have a lot of interesting stories that all sort of tie into dog training. And we just try to give as much advice as we can, just because we just want to help people.
Hey, we're going to take a quick break, but I'll be right back. Besides baby-led weaning, what other type of podcasts do you like to listen to? Well, if you're into true crime and you also dig traveling, I want to tell you about a new podcast you are going to love. The new podcast is called Slaycation, and it's a darkly humorous look at murders and mysterious deaths that all take place on vacation. So the show is hosted by a true crime fanatic and her comedy writer husband, and he has a TV producing partner. So Slaycation brings a totally unique perspective to chilling, thrilling, what the heck stories of vacations gone horribly wrong. From the twisted tale of Harold and Tony Henthorne, whose romantic anniversary in the Rocky Mountains ended with one of them falling off a cliff, to Angelica and Vincent, their two recently engaged lovebirds, whose Hudson Valley kayaking adventure ended up underwater. Every episode of Slaycation will have you asking, accident or murder? But it's not just the stories that will intrigue you. I think you're going to love the discussion between the longtime married couple and the business partners. They also happen to be an Emmy-nominated TV producers. Every episode of Slaycation also includes humor and takeaway and travel tips that are going to keep your next family vacation from becoming your last. So if you're ready to pack your body bags, Slaycation is available on all major podcast platforms. Search for Slaycation on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts. For the first like 400 episodes of my show, I was not a dog person. Like, we have 7 children. My husband travels almost 100% of the time. Like, I know how this story ends. It's me doing all the work if we have a dog. And I never say I dislike animals. I just don't like them. Like, even saying that, people just start cringing. They blow you up on social media. I can't believe you don't like animals. So what I just start saying is, I'm scared of animals. I'm scared of dogs. I grew up in a family where my parents always had dogs, but they were never trained. They get hit by a car. I remember a dog that literally had a broken leg. I was like, Dad, I think this dog needs to be put down. And like, bite everyone that touched him. Like, very, very terrible experience growing up with animals. I just never wanted them in my life. Fast forward, my kids are begging for a dog. And we had a family friend pass away very unexpectedly with the 2.5-year-old perfectly trained golden doodle. I mean, his dad had trained him and like, this guy's the most anal guy in the world. And this dog like needed a home very quickly. And I was like, oh my gosh, fast forward. This is the best thing that ever happened to me. I love this dog so much. My husband's like, this is crazy. You said you were never going to get a dog. I was like, but like the right dog for the right family at the right time. Like, I know I couldn't. My sister's has a puppy at this time. And I'm like watching what she's going through. It's literally the same thing as having a dog. I am actually blown away how getting a new dog is like getting a new baby. And I'm like in the headspace of my ideal customer avatar. Like, oh my gosh, all these things you don't know. And the things you can get shamed for in baby space versus dog space. Like, there's a lot of similarities. So you talked about jealousy. I didn't know that was a thing, but like, I'm not lying. I'm telling you the truth. The dog loves me the most because I'm home with the dog all day. The kids go to school. My husband travels. Like, he likes me the most. And the kids are like, the kids are jealous because they're like, the dog likes you the most. And I'm like, oh gosh, now I have to like be sensitive to your emotions about whether or not the dog likes you. Like, is there a favorite person in the family?
It definitely, dogs do have favorites, but I think favorites can shift. Even in our own household, favorites shift. So like right now, I would say our dog we have, he turns 8 actually fairly soon here. Right now, I would say I'm probably his favorite. But there were times where like my wife would take him and do training with him and stuff. And like when she's working with him, she's his favorite. She's like, yeah, dad, whatever. I want to be with mom. And so I think with dogs, and this is what I always tell people, the question I always ask, who does most of the work with the dog? And whoever's doing the most work with the dog in positive interactions with the dog is going to be the one the dog prefers to be with. People can be like, well, I run, and like the kids could be, I run and play with the dog and the dog plays with me. Why doesn't it like me more? Dogs love structure. Dogs are pack animals. They have their hierarchy. And so whoever they see as above them, they tend to navigate towards. So with the kids, I just tell them, I tell kids work with the dogs a little bit more, put a leash on the dog, grab some treats and just try to do some obedience. Even if it's the most simple, basic things, getting the dog to listen to the kid puts the kid at a different level in the dog's brain.
That is so helpful. And you mentioned like the pack thing. This dog came from a very peaceful environment with one owner who loved him. And then he comes into our house and we're trying very hard, but it is loud. It is stressful. And there's one of my quadruplets, the dog nipped him the other day. And now he's convinced that the dog doesn't like him. So we're trying to do the thing like, you need to spend more time with him. I don't want to make the kid feel bad, but like, if the dog knows you're scared of them, as someone who's been scared of dogs my entire life, like I know they can sense evil, but they can sense when you're scared of them and they mess with you more. Like, I swear the dog like kind of seeks out and messes with this one kid. So I'm trying to have him like, same thing, put the leash on, go for a walk, do some obedience stuff and give him some treats. Like, is that the right approach? And is that okay? Or do they just, dogs are just maybe going to not like one of your kids more than the other ones?
It's always interesting how people perceive certain dog behaviors. And what I find is when somebody is nervous around a dog, you'll see your dog starting to act out of character almost. And it's not because they're trying to take advantage or anything. It's more because they're stressed. So what you're seeing is your dog acting out almost in stressful way. Like maybe they get more hyper around a certain kid that they're not comfortable with. It's because they don't know what to do. And they're a little bit more, I don't know if you want to say the dog could be more spastic, more hyper, whatever. Like people think, oh, the dog, I yell at the dog and then it jumps all over me because it doesn't want to listen. No, that's how it responds to stress. You know, so it could be something as simple as like, it may seem like he's picking on or acting differently around that child, but it could be because that energy of the child is affecting the dog's behavior. And yeah, they could hang out together more. You want to find things that the dog and kid can do together that are going to be not very stressful. I rather have quality over quantity. Like, no, don't hang out with the dog all day. But when you do, let's make sure it's playing fetch or, you know, maybe the kid starts to put food in the bowl and they're just doing things to build the relationship into a different value.
Okay, I have to ask you about the dog food because I feel like for generations, dogs ate dog food. And then now there's all these fancy food services that cost a lot, et cetera. And it's just like in my world, like for generations, parents fed their babies modified versions of the same foods the babies eat. And then starting in the early part of the 20th century, there's all these commercial processed baby foods you can buy. But like, what kind of food? Like, is there one type of food for all dogs? Is it okay just to give your dog food or do you have to like buy these fancy food services?
No, you don't have to buy fancy food services. Everything goes to what you can afford to. We feed our dog raw food. So he gets raw meat, eggs. He gets a whole list of things. We buy it pre-made, but at the same time, he's our kid. We have one dog. So like when it comes to like money stuff, it's him. Dogs have lived a long time by being fed kibble. And I know it's popular to be like, oh, kibble's bad for dogs now and everything like that. But truth be told, it's more about the kibble you feed than kibble in general. Like, I don't want a blanket statement kibble and be like, it's all bad.
So what would you be looking for if you're going the kibble route? Because, I mean, people groceries cost enough money. And I get what you're saying. Like, that's your splurge. That's your call. And you're not shaming anyone who can't do that. If you're in the kibble category, as we are in our family, what sort of ingredients do you look for or not look for?
You can go grain-free. I don't really think unless you go to the vet and the vet says it has a grain allergy, I try not to go to grain-free too much. But really, the main things you're looking for is a quality protein. I don't like seeing corn. What I want to see is like, let's say you're feeding your dog chicken and rice or something as like it's a pretty popular flavor. So you're feeding your dog chicken and rice. The first ingredient should be chicken. The second ingredient should be chicken meal, which is just the dried version of that protein.
Tell me about the course that you and your wife teach, the course that you have, the course that you guys are creating. So for families who are interested in making some more of these boundaries, how can your course help us?
Yeah, the course that we have available right now is called Welcome Home. And that is a very robust course that goes over crate training, healing, sits down, stay. It's all the obedience stuff. It talks about house management things. We go through a ton. There's like 5+ hours of video in it. It's really good if you have a dog and you're just starting from scratch. We have a course that we're working on right now called Remote Paws. And PAWS stands for Proactive Approach for Well-Being and Safety. And proactive is the key. That's something that we feel like if people can just get ahead, it's just think ahead a little bit of like, here's my dog's problem. How can I address it? You can get ahead of the problem and stop it before it becomes too bad. And it's just a course that we found was sort of lacking. Like people can do online courses for dog training, sits and downs and stays. You can go in-person classes. But once you get home, your dog might know all the stuff you learned in class. But then you get home and your dog's like still jumping on the counter, still chewing on your shoes, still eating the couch or stealing things, playing keep away. And people are like, my dog knows everything, but it's still doing this. How do we fix this? And that's what that course is designed to do. It's designed to just help people work through their problem and come up with a proactive kind of approach to being able to get these things resolved.
What does the remote in Remote Paws mean? Is it because it's like a distance remote course?
It's a remote course, but also it sort of was initially designed because we do a lot of virtual talking with people, whether it be in the course that me and you met in or other places. And we see how often dogs become problems within those meetings. Oh, the dog's in the background barking, or because you're talking to a computer, your dog then decides to just chew on something it's not supposed to, or it pees in the house, or you can't let your dog be unattended. So it's in the room with you screaming. And we're like, we can work on these things. And so that's kind of how remote sort of came up. Is it's remote, meaning it's an online course, but it also means like the reason it was created was initially created to be able to help people who are trying to just sit in these meetings and want to be able to trust that their dog's just going
to
be
I'm just trying to do my job. Exactly.
Yeah. I just want my dog to be over here chilling and not causing any problems. And I just want to be comfortable while I'm in my meeting, knowing my dog's going to be safe.
Thank you so much for coming on and sharing some of these tips. I will link to your courses, your resources, your podcast as well in the show notes for our app. But I did just want to say thank you again for sharing your time and your expertise. There are a lot of similarities about bringing a dog home and bringing a baby home, and you have to peacefully coexist with both of them. So I appreciate your time and all the tips you shared today.
Oh, not a problem. Thank you for having me on.
Well, I hope you guys enjoyed that interview with Jake Schneider. He's from On Dog Training Academy. His online program is called Welcome Home. I'll link them in the description where you're listening to this, but they'll also be on the show notes page for this episode, which you can find at blwpodcast.com/426. And a special thank you to our partners at Airwave Media. If you guys like podcasts that feature food and science and using your brain, listen to some of the shows that Airwave has. We are online at blwpodcast.com. Good luck feeding your baby and feeding your dog. I'll catch you next time. Bye now.